Hello and welcome to this edition of Majlis. I am Mohammed Tahir, Director of Turkmen Service at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. In this show, we will be looking into Turkmenistan's increasing mega projects of questionable outcome in the face of its shrinking economy. As we speak, various companies are not able to pay salaries of their employees on time. Unemployment is increasing. Even companies related to gas sector are reported to be laying off tens of its employees. On the other hand, Turkmenistan is just finishing construction of $1.5 billion worth of east-west pipeline. It is just kicking off $8 billion worth of trans-Afghan pipeline. It continues pouring money in $5 billion worth Awaza tourism project, $6.5 billion Golden Century Lake project, etc. In the upcoming 30 minutes, we will be trying to understand the logic of this strategy. To discuss the subject here in the studio, I have Sulamir Hurak. He is author of a number of publications in books on Turkmenistan and Turkmen economy. From London, Dr. Lokan Çiftçi is with us, who is Director of Central Asian Studies at Glasgow University and author of a number of publications on Turkmenistan, including on its neutrality. From Prague, my colleague Bruce Panier is joining us over the phone, who is the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog called Kishlak Awazi. Thank you for joining me, gentlemen, in this edition of Majlis.
Thank you.
Dr. Luka, let's first do some reality check. We have been recently getting all sort of reports that gives us only an impression that the economy is not doing well in Turkmenistan. Those indications include uncertainty in financial market, scarcity of dollar, state restrictions on its mobility, rising unemployment, and so on. Let's first of all try to analyze the real economy. What do you get from Turkmenistan, and what does it mean in your opinion?
Well, what I've heard, and of course, working on that kind of problems entails a whole array of information that comes and are difficult to verify. But I heard from different sources from within the country that the real economy is struggling quite a lot. The devaluation overnight on New Year's Day was actually just the starting on an avalanche of measures that showed outwardly that the economy is struggling. At the bottom of everything, there is the fact that we know that Turkmenistan is struggling with getting the same amount of revenues for the gas exported. There is a true export crisis going on at the moment because Turkmenistan, first of all, because the prices are low, so the gas that is traded with China is actually bringing in fewer, smaller revenues, but also because of the structure of the trade at the moment. Turkmenistan is repaying the debt it contracted with China for the construction of the pipeline, so it's not getting much revenues. And that's the fundamental observation here, that a state, an economy that primarily runs on gas revenues is experiencing a dramatic time in getting these revenues back. On top of that, we have total failure to diversify. Last 25 years, if we look at the economy of 2015, it's very, very much similar to 1995. No significant change has been introduced, which means that over-reliance on raw materials continues to dominate what the economy is about. There is no significant emphasis on any other sector rather than that, and that's not a good time because prices are generally low. And also because we know that failure to diversify created a sort of problematic internal situation when it comes to distribution of wealth. Whoever was poor stayed poor, and whoever was rich stayed rich. Of course, and in some extent, this wealthy part sort of shrank. So we heard that there are problems with food inflation. We heard that there have been a few strikes in the Bafalayat amongst oil workers and gas workers. And that is a couple of indicators that show to me that the legitimacy of the regime when it comes to its economic performance is actually very low. So it's not a good time, really.
Right. Bruce, this situation was developing for some time, right?
They've cut back on this stuff even as of a couple of years ago, they said that they would still deliver a certain amount of gas free to the public, but after above that, they would have to pay. And to be fair, the prices are relatively low, certainly compared to what we're paying in Europe, for example. But it was an indication that they weren't going to be able to finance those kind of subsidies anymore. And the situation this year, of course, has gotten much worse with that, where all of a sudden they are starting to, all the things that used to be free, water, electricity, gas, things like that, are now, that people do have to pay something for that. So it is a sign that the economy is deteriorating a little bit. I suppose on one hand, you'd have to say that's, it could be a good thing that people should have to pay for some of this kind of stuff. But for Turkmen people who for two decades and more have been used to having this stuff for free, that was one of the ways of controlling popular discontent, was to provide at least the basics to people. And now we're having a hard time even getting the basics to them. So it does raise questions about how viable the government is in the months and just a couple of years coming down the road.
Right. Colleagues, please feel free to cross-question each other and ask questions to have more informal discussion here. Mr. Horak, how did Turkmenistan come to this point? It's supposed to be a rich country. You remember once the previous president Niyazov was comparing the country with second Kuwait. What was the tipping points which led Turkmenistan into this situation today?
I think that the reasons were explained by my colleagues. First of all, that our reliance of Turkmenistan to gas or raw materials export. The second point, which was mentioned by my colleague Furkan Seski, it was that gas price decreases and our reliance or transfer of reliance of gas exports from Russia. We know that until 2009, the bulk of resources, bulk of gas was exported to Russia. Then the export was stopped under still unclear circumstances. Then the building and the construction of Turkmenistan-China pipeline was highly accelerated, and this pipeline came to the exploitation starting from 2009, leading to over reliance or over real high influence of China and high reliance of Turkmenistan on China's vector, which was not able to be refilled by other directions, be it Russia, which is not so interested in Turkmen gas anymore, be it Iran with quite similar reasons, and be it, planned construction of a system of pipelines which could lead the Turkmen gas from Turkmenistan to through Caspian Sea and to Caucasus states, Turkey, and to Europe. So any of these three alternative to China projects were not successful, and dropping sharp decrease of gas price and gas export into these directions, I think was the main cause. The main reasons for this situation. Of course, we can see now that a part of what was mentioned, we have now the problems with exchange of values operations. We have a strict limit for population and hardens any business operations with the Turkmen partners in general, not only with the gas sector, but also on a petty or small trade sector and other productive sectors of Turkmen economy.
Bruce, how the regime is responding to this crisis?
Well, they've pretty much reverted to their tried and true tactic of denying that there's any problem. I mean, they're great at ignoring these things and claiming that everything is well in the country. I would just add one thing here is that we know they have security problems along the Afghan border, and of necessity, they must be spending some money to build up their military and security forces at the moment. We don't know. We haven't seen any reports on who they would be buying weapons from or what kind of money they would obviously be spending on this kind of stuff. But I think it's safe to assume that they're having to spend money on this, and they haven't had to do that before. Now, as concerns the government itself, for the reasons that we've already heard and that Luca was just listening to, I mean, it's becoming visible, I think, to the public now that there is a problem in the country. As concerns the Afghan border, the government's been done very well at keeping that information under tap so that no one really knows what's happening down there. But some of these other things, you know, the lifting of subsidies on some of these basic things, like I said, projects that they started for urban renewal and stuff, where they, you know, when we've reported on that, where they've moved people out of neighborhoods with the promise they were going to build this other great new neighborhood, and now nothing's being done because they don't have the money to do it. These things are going to catch up with them sooner or later. People are going to be able to see with their own eyes that a lot of the stuff that they were promised 2 or 3 years ago when money was much more abundant is not being done, and they're going to start asking questions about what exactly is going on. And you can keep claiming as much as you want that everything's fine and there's no reason to worry, but I think there's probably already a lot of doubts on the minds of in the minds of the people of Turkmenistan about what is really going on in the country right now.
Right, Bruce, you also said the problem became visible in the country. Mr. Horak, couldn't the authorities realize that this is coming up?
Well, I think that partly there are still some people who can realize that the situation is very serious. However, the problem is that the majority, I wouldn't say that 50% or 40% or how many share of people are really care about the situation. However, the top level politicians and top level elites, it seems to me that they absolutely doesn't care about the consequences of their steps. If you can see the problems with the dollar exchange right now, that's the question of expanding of Berdi Muhammadov's family empire, if I can talk about that, and people know perfectly about that the best kinship in out is to be a relative or a friend of some of sister of Berdi Muhammadov. So this is I think a real problem. Berdi Muhammadov has to feed up a lot of relatives right now, and the sources for this feeding up the family is getting to be less and less. So this is one of the problem, and it seems to me that Berdi Muhammadov still is very lucky in one point, which still contains some open expressions of discontent, because Turkmenistan is the country with less and less people. If you can talk about a real situation, of course we don't know how many people really lives in Turkmenistan, but we know that the most active people still are trying to emigrate somehow. The other people which are still in the country are, let's say, less and less educated, more and more available for control. So it's still lucky for Berdi Muhammadov that people are not ready, and they are not still strong enough to express their openly their discontent with the contemporary situation.
Great. Dr. Luka, Mr. Horak said an interesting point here that authorities probably realize, but they don't care about what is going on the ground, mm-hmm. right? What is your take on that? Is it something that authorities don't care, or they just don't understand the logic of economy here?
Well, it will catch up with them whichever way. They either don't care or they don't respond. The crisis is there. And as Bruce said, these things will catch up with them. When you grow up in a context when you're told that this is the golden age, and then Turkmenistan as a neutral state can't be invaded, and all these myths crash one after the other, then some people would actually start question, who are we actually ruled by? But as Lavimir said, this is really about having a population that is non-politicized, less specialized. I mean, generally speaking, very much easy to be controlled by the regime. So there is a wider context. It does not only say at the elite level, but it says also, you know, how that is perceived in the wider population. But I still think that there is a general sort of attitude of we don't care about what was going on, because don't forget, when it comes to the economy, the big money is made in the gas sector, and they control the revenues themselves, which means that being a super non-transparent environment, it allows people to keep going with their corrupt practices even at times of crisis. And that's why also we should start asking ourselves, what's going to happen when the money is going to drastically sort of reduce. Is it going to be intra-elite struggle? We don't know. I mean, the thing is that with Turkmenistan, there is this continual alternation of moment of stability with moments of very high instability. We're going through a very unstable time at the moment, but these things can change pretty quickly.
Right. Let's take a short break here. When we come back, we will try to understand what officials are really trying to do to cope with this situation and how much the official steps are in line with what needs to be done to handle the situation today. Welcome back to the Majlis. Today we are discussing Turkmenistan's increasing mega projects of questionable outcome in the face of shrinking economy. Joining me in the studio is Slavomir Hurak, who is author of many publications in Turkmenistan, Dr. Luka Ancisci, head of Central Asia Studies at the Glasgow University, Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog called Kishlak Awazi. I am Mohammed Tahir, director of Turkmen Service. Mr. Hurak, before the break, we did some reality check on the ground. It seems not good. On the other hand, number of mega projects are underway in Turkmenistan, and several of them will be either completed this month or the construction will start this month. For example, construction of East-West pipeline worth of $1.5 billion will be completed in December. I have no idea about its objective. It's supposed to bring gas from Eastern Turkmenistan to Western Turkmenistan. Then there will be another pipeline which would carry gas from through Caspian Sea to Europe. I don't see that is the case today. Construction of another big project, that's $8 billion worth, TAPI, Trans-Afghan Pakistan and India pipeline, will be kicked off in December. And according to some reports, Turkmenistan will be the main investor of that project, providing nearly 80% of the entire investment. I have to say, yes, the pipeline is very attractive, but it is impossible under the current security situation in Afghanistan. Then one question, logic of why going ahead with this pipeline. Also, the same is true here with Turkmenistan, Tajikistan, Afghanistan railway line. Turkmenistan has reportedly just completed its section of the multi-billion project. How do you read these projects from the economic and business perspective under current circumstances?
Talking about pipelines and east-west gas projects and TAPI projects and a host of other projects, I would like to add even more projects which are internal inside Turkmenistan. There are a lot of money spent on Turkmenistan projects like Avaza, which was mentioned here, and also we shouldn't forget about the objects prepared for Asiada 2017. It's all pouring of a lot of money. Of course, one point is that from the ideological point, we can look on this project as some kind of self-presentation of Berdimuhamedov's regime and Berdimuhamedov's personally himself, because he was one of the initiators of the project. Okay, TAPI was the older one, but Berdimuhamedov was that person who accelerated the project once again. That's one point. Economically, of course, we have to admit that almost no pipeline of no project of that type is not has not been occupied fully. So we have to take it as not only like the project which should be which should get full revenue, but it should be seen as a project with a geopolitical importance. Talking about geopolitical importance of Turkmenistan and of course geopolitical importance of the Berdimuhamedov itself. That's a very important point we should bear in mind always, that this, the tendency to self-presentation of Turkmen president is highly positioned behind any of these projects I mentioned. So there is no like economic sense, even more if you talk about security issues. We have to doubt about the accomplishment of any project dealing with Turkmenistan and Afghanistan themselves, because the situation in Afghanistan is well known. So nevertheless, this importance, ideological importance, either inside or outside, should be taken as one of the key issues when decided where to pour another millions of dollars.
Dr. Luca, first, your reaction to what Slavomir Horak said about that the intention behind this project was not the economic value, but the kind of presentation of the country or the political motivations. First, your reaction to that. If that is the case, then Turkmenistan is just getting things very wrong. I mean, we are talking about these two, three projects, which are either will be completed in near future or the start will take place soon. But if you go back even to Niyazov's period, you have golden century lakh project in Karakum. It seems authorities are pouring money into this project for years now. My latest figure says $6.5 billion being already invested with zero benefit up to today, and it continues. Then you have Awaz, as Mr. Horak mentioned, and it's a multi-billion tourism zone. I don't see why would anyone go there for holiday. It has nothing to offer, basically. Even if one wishes to go, with the regime of Turkmenistan will not allow this to happen. So these are the dead projects. What's your reaction?
I wouldn't go to Awaz to start with, but in general terms, I agree with Slavomir. There is a significant part of it which is connected to the image-making strategy of the regime. But he has been already very sort of dealing with that. So I'm going to go on to the second aspect of this for me, which is corruption. I think that a lot of the money which we say is spent in this project actually is channeled into some non-transparent funds. I can't see, I agree with you. It's not only the fact that they don't need them, it's also the fact that they don't use them, which is a double sort of problem there. So I start to believe that behind this virtual politics of infrastructure, which we see in Turkmenistan becoming more and more and more important, there is a significant part of corruption. Who gets the money? I'm not sure. We will never know, most likely. Could be intra-elite. Could be maybe expanding the elite to some business sectors that are more important, organized around sort of clanic way, if you want, or around some more geographical distribution of power. But it seems to me that all this money is channeled to some non-transparent transaction. And just one thing on the railway, which was finished, you know, apparently in the last, or is about to finish, the one in Afghanistan. We're just talking about 88 Ks. It's a very short track. And they still haven't finished a couple of bridges to be built on the line. But the money is quite consistent. So it seems to me that really these big projects are in reality big pots of cash to be used to sort of extend the patronage network of the president. And just to conclude, this seems to me another sign of regime decline. He's doing that because he's probably worried that there are many cracks within the regime. But this could be just an impression. I don't want to be sort of, you know, being conspiratorial here. But I can't justify all of these talks for money, for infrastructure, which I don't need and not use in any other way.
Right. Bruce, now we have two different points about why all these multi-billion dollar projects are going on. One is aspect of corruption. The other is image making, image building. What is your point of view on these, or if you have any other angle to this, what's going on?
Well, first I'd say I don't see any conflict with those two images. Actually, it's probably a little bit of both. You know, as far as the East-West pipeline, of course, this was a project that was begun, you know, many, many years ago. Well, 6-7 years ago anyway. It was supposed to serve this pre-Caspisk pipeline, which was planned in days when Turkmenistan had better relationship with Russia. You know, once that was out, then all of a sudden it was seen as possibly serving the Trans-Caspian pipeline if and when it's ever built. So this was a project that was already in motion, you know, several years ago anyway. So they, you know, I can kind of see the reason for finishing that. The 88 kilometers of railway from Turkmenistan to the Afghan border, that one's a little harder for me to appreciate. I don't see the huge value in that because we know what the situation is just south of the border in Afghanistan. They're, you know, I mean, they say that they're going to start construction in Afghanistan next a year early in January. I can't see that happening. TAPI, of course, seems to be a total waste of money at this point. You know, we know the project's $8, $10 billion, and the section in Turkmenistan is going to be like 200 kilometers long. That's about, you know, 12% of the whole length of the pipeline is going to go through Turkmenistan. So, you do the math real quick, and you figure they're going to spend $1 billion, roughly, just on construction in the Turkmen territory. So I don't see it. You know, I mean, they've created this facade. That's part of the problem. I mean, for years they've been feeding the people these lines that we're part of these big projects and they're going to save the country. You know, we were talking about visible signs and what the people could see. They can't take these away from them anymore. So I think they're just kind of going ahead with it with the hope that, you know, somehow everything will just work out all right in the end. But they can't just say we've had to suspend, you know, construction on these projects because of, you know, problems that we didn't foresee. That's even worse. I mean, you know, it's true, but they should be able to say, look, the situation's decayed in northern Afghanistan. We can't run these things into there anymore. But they painted this rosy picture of, you know, the positive power of neutrality in their country, and they, you know, seem to have indicated that would wipe aside all obstacles to any of these big projects. So they've kind of got themselves in a big trap here at the moment. So I think they're forced to keep doing these projects, even though they're going nowhere at the moment. I mean, it's like I said, especially TAPI seems like an extravagant waste of money for something that they're not going to get much out of. Now, that said, there's possibly a practical side to this. The East-West pipeline is one example I would use, that if there actually was a Trans-Caspian pipeline, Turkmenistan has the infrastructure on its territory to support it. You could make the same claim about TAPI if they keep going ahead with construction, that if there actually is a time when they can build TAPI, the Turkmen side has already built the necessary pipeline and compressor stations and everything on its territory. So it's just a matter of the other countries building their sections of it and linking up to Turkmenistan, which of course serves the Turkmen government interest very well too, because then they don't have to look for onshore investment, and they're very loath to include foreigners on their territory in these projects. So you can see something about that. But at a time when they're strapped for cash, I just can't see wasting this kind of money on this stuff when there's no visible return coming anytime soon. And it might not come at all. Who knows? You know, I mean, I was thinking the other day, pretty soon they won't need to have like a border fence along the Afghan-Turkmen border. You'll just see where the pipeline ends and where the railroad track ends and all that stuff, and everyone will understand that's the border. So, I think, unfortunately, they've really gotten themselves into a hole here, where they've been promising so much that failure to deliver. I mean, they need pictures. They need Berdy Muhammadov out there, you know, with it, watching people build the railroad and watching people build the pipelines, and so that they can show that and say, see, we're going ahead with these projects. And failure to do so just raises more doubts in people's minds about, is there anything being done? We were told this was going to happen. This was going to bring more money, and we were going to be a great nation, all that kind of stuff.
It is too expensive adventure, Bruce.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, especially, you know, the railroad is one thing. It's not a huge amount of money to spend. But we know that, 400 kilometers of that railroad has to go through Afghanistan before it gets to Tajikistan, and Tajikistan has consistently said it does not have the money to build its part of the railroad, and has been looking at Turkmenistan, I think, even promised them money. I don't know where that's going to come from. So, but TAPI, you know, TAPI is something else. I mean, gas pipelines are not cheap to build. And this, you know, it's one thing to build the compressor stations because you can reroute your pipelines. You can find another project maybe later. But to build a pipeline that runs all the way to the Afghan border just seems to me to be foolishness. I would, you know, if I was a Turkmen citizen and I was informed of all the facts, I'd be outraged.
I was getting a report from the Afghan side. The Afghan official was caught in that. Turkmenistan is going to invest 80 or 85% of the entire project to TAPI pipeline. So we are not talking only about the Turkmenistan leg of that pipeline. Turkmenistan intends to invest all of the pipeline. So it's a huge, huge money that we are talking about here. So anyway, we are running out of our time here. But the final question I have is, what should Turkmen authorities be doing now and immediately to avoid a catastrophe, avoid a further unexpected situation in the country?
Well, I'll jump in first, I guess, real fast. They can either, one, say they're moving to austerity, and we've seen that in other Central Asian countries, Kazakhstan notably, and just kind of admit, you know, I mean, Turkmenistan, they've already hinted, officials, even Berdy Muhammadov has said, there's a world economic crisis underway. Not one in Turkmenistan, but there's a world crisis underway, and it's affecting Turkmenistan. So they can say, you know, this is the situation. It's not our fault. It's not of our making, but we're going to need to cut back a little bit of this stuff. Now, the more extreme possibility, which I can't foresee happening, is they could throw open the doors to foreign investment. If they could bring people in from outside to invest in some projects and help with infrastructure projects, then they could probably save themselves, at least in the short term. But we know that the isolationist nature of the Turkmen government precludes that as a possibility.
Thank you. Dr. Luca?
If you promise to the people that you're going to deliver the golden age, you can't really turn out with austerity pretty quickly, can you? So that's the fundamental conundrum on how they're going to work out this crisis. I think that, you know, what Bruce said was going to happen, you know, like a very slow turn towards the policy of austerity, saying it's not because of us, it happened elsewhere, we'll do it anyway. But that also depends on the kind of response, internal response, that we've had so far at the crisis. These are things which simply we don't know. I mean, the country is so very much sealed off the rest of the world. It is difficult to understand. But again, it's very problematic. But I think that what we've seen so far, at least in 2015, it's a very significant change in the way in which the regime is operating in the economy. There is a crisis, but they seem not to respond, but they're probably hinting at something, and we'll just watch this space, I reckon.
Right. Mr. Hurat?
I would agree with my colleagues. Just maybe adding that the problem on Turkmen side is that we can tell them, we can advise them anything, but they will do according to what they know how to do the things. And I don't see, even despite this crisis 2015, I don't see a lot of changes in the minds of the Turkmen elite and those who have a decision-making process, because Turkmen side doesn't change its approach to the economy, trying to exploit them, trying to show its success to the internal to Turkmen people, and of course they have to do something at least, or pretend to do something. They can pretty make some part of a TAPI project and show it in a TV as it's the plan has been accomplished, and we are good, we are doing something good for people. The same with the projects on Abaza or the projects on Aziada in 2017. We had promised to do these and these things. We are doing something despite all the hardships or the problems. So it means that I think that Turkmen side will continue with the project until the maybe very death. We will see next or in the following years that Turkmen regime is more sustainable than we can see now.
Thank you, Slavomir Hurak from Charles University, for your insightful thoughts. Also, big thanks goes to Dr. Luka Ancici, Director of Central Asia Studies Center at Glasgow University, and my colleague Bruce Spanier, who is the editor of RFRL Central Asia blog called Kishlak Awazi. And dear listeners, thank you very much for taking time to listen to Majlis. This is it from me, Mohamed Tahir, Director of Turkmen Service at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Thank you very much for listening to Majlis. Bye-bye.